In just 1 week, Americans who haven't early voted will cast their votes for president, Congress, and local offices. And in more than half the states, they'll also vote on judges. They're races that can have far-reaching consequences, even though they don't usually get much attention. We're joined now by Alicia Bannon, senior counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School. Alicia, some states elect judges, others appoint them. Why isn't there just one system?
Well, so there are 38 states that use some form of election for choosing their judges, and that includes contested elections where you have multiple candidates who'll be vying for a single seat. And then it also includes what are known as retention elections, where you have a sitting judge that then stands for a yes or no vote. So they don't have an opponent, but the public decides whether or not to keep them on the bench. And then you also do have some states that use appointments either from the governor or by the legislature. When our country was founded, all states used some kind of an appointment system. But then later in the 19th century, elections were actually a reform measure. There was a concern that courts were too closely aligned with the political branches and that they weren't being enough of a check on them. So elections were supposed to be a reform to empower courts to do a better job of overseeing the other branches of government.
Is it possible to say which is a better system, the states that elect their judges versus the states that appoint them, in terms of just carrying out justice in this country?
Well, I mean, I think there are advantages and disadvantages to all systems. I think what we're seeing now with how elections are functioning is that there are real concerns in terms of the pressures that elections are putting on judges. In recent years, they've become really high costs. They've attracted a lot of special interest influence. We're seeing a lot of attack ads targeting judges for decisions on the bench, especially in criminal cases. And there's a growing body of evidence that those election pressures are actually impacting how judges are deciding cases. Now, that's not necessarily inherent to any kind of election system, but with the role of money that we're seeing today and, the increased politicization of these races, I do think that it's really creating a threat to fairness in our courts.
Who are the special interests? Who's donating money to try to elect certain judges?
Well, the most common interests that are weighing in, especially at the Supreme Court level, are business interests and plaintiff-side trial lawyers. The growing politicization of these races really goes back to the tort wars. So you've had these battles over courts in terms of how business-friendly they're seen to be. And we've seen money pouring in, essentially creating an arms race with plaintiff's lawyers looking for judges who are more friendly to plaintiff's interests and then business interests looking for judges on the other side. And so those have been the biggest spenders by far. Unions, political parties in general, those have been some other big players as well.
Would a judge have to recuse herself from a case in which the defendant is a business that had donated to the campaign?
Well, it depends on the state. And in many states, the answer is no. So as a general matter, states have pretty weak rules regarding judicial recusal. Those rules really haven't kept up with the new realities of how important money has become in these races. So most states don't have clear rules about when judges have to step aside from cases. And that's especially the case with outside spending. So when interest groups are spending directly on buying advertisements, things like that, there's very few states that have any guidance for judges about when they need to step aside in the face of that spending. And so it can create real serious conflicts of interest, and states have been very slow to respond to any meaningful regulation or guidance for judges.
Can you look at the decisions that judges make in election years and see a difference between those decisions and the ones in non-election years?
Yes, there is evidence, particularly in the criminal justice realm, that, for example, judges sentence more harshly in election years. There's also evidence that when there are more television advertisements in judicial elections, that corresponds with judges being more likely to vote against criminal defendants. So there's a lot of evidence that particularly the focus on criminal justice, which is, you know, very often what judges are attacked on in attack ads, you know, soft on crime and the like, that that concerns that their decisions are going to be fodder for these attacks is actually putting pressure on judges and how they're approaching criminal cases. So, you know, this can be a life or death issue. This evidence holds up in death penalty cases and also in terms of the length of sentences.
This election could flip control of North Carolina's state Supreme Court from Republican-affiliated judges to more liberal-leaning judges. And in an unusual move for a judicial election, President Obama even weighed in on this. Here he is in a video message endorsing the Democrat in the race, Mike Morgan.
I'm Barack Obama, calling to urge you to go to the polls and vote for Mike Morgan for North Carolina Supreme Court.
What's going on in North Carolina's state Supreme Court race?
Well, as you said, this is a high stakes race for North Carolina. You have a court that is 4-3 Republican affiliated, and this is an opportunity to flip the court to the other side. You know, the incumbent judge that's standing for election is a Republican, and so if he loses, his opponent would move the court in another direction. And you know what we've seen around the country is that when you have these closely divided courts, those are also often the races that attract the most attention because they're really important races. You know, state Supreme Courts make a lot of very significant decisions. They're the final word on state law in that state. You know, among other things, they make rulings on issues like redistricting that can have a huge implication for the political landscape at large in a state. They decide criminal cases. They decide, you know, voting rights issues, reproductive rights, consumer rights. You know, these are very significant courts. And so, you know, partisan interests pay attention and special interests pay attention in these races. So you mentioned how President Obama made an endorsement, which to my knowledge, I don't know of another time that a U.S. president has weighed in on a judicial race. We've also been seeing a huge amount of money pouring in, again, from both sides. So I think we're seeing a lot of attention in North Carolina because it's such a high stakes race.
And yet I have to imagine that in most places, the voters have no idea who these judges are. They're not really a part of the everyday voter's life in the same way as a member of Congress, a senator, or a president.
That's right. I think as a general matter, these are pretty low information races. So most people don't know anything about who sits on their Supreme Courts. And I think that's part of the reason why they attract some of this special interest money is that, you know, because when people don't know anything about the candidates, you know, if you're able to pull enough money together to put together some TV ads, that may be the only thing that people are hearing about those candidates. So with not a lot of money, you can potentially have a pretty outsized influence on the legal environment in a state by helping to shape who lands on these courts. And, you know, generally states don't do a good job of giving voters information. So there aren't many states that, for example, provide voter guides or judicial performance evaluations, other tools that would at least give voters information that they could use to make informed decisions.
That's Alicia Bannon, a senior counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU's School of Law. Alicia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.